Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Entropy by E.R. White and Jennifer Hartman, narrated by Louise Brenner and T.J. Clark. Chapter 1. Indy. When my heel catches on a piece of upturned carpet, and the triple shot latte dapples my work blouse in shades of cinnamon dolce, I can't help but laugh. I'm certain this will be the most eventful part of my day. Tamika greets me with a sympathetic smile, her teeth the dazzling sort of white I've only seen in toothpaste commercials. Her eyes case my espresso-adorned belly. Rough morning? Oh, you know, trying to find excitement where I can. I breeze, punching in my code as I clock in beside her. Mondays aren't as thrilling as our Saturday night margarita marathons. Girl, I'm still recovering. Lord, me too. As a recently divorced 28-year-old, my pastimes include being a single mother and not getting pregnant again. Well, not for a very long time anyway. I finally have a routine, a system I've carefully established over the last 18 months of debilitating chaos as I adjust to doing everything on my own. I'm a bank teller by day, mother to a precocious preschooler all day every day, and by night, I can be found cozied up on the couch with my chamomile tea and a good book. Needless to say, my tequila adventures with Tamika are still doing a number on me. Tinkering with her boho headband, my best friend and coworker shoots me a wink as she straightens her skirt. Well, you wear your hangover as well as you wear your coffee stains. Homeless and inept? She snorts. Sweetie, I've yet to see a homeless person rock a balayage like you. My fingers lace through my lightly curled hair on instinct, a timid smile tipping my lips. The compliment warms me, considering it wasn't long ago that I had fallen into a black hole of hopelessness, completely letting myself go. The divorce was hard. Endings are hard. Losing my grip on something I tried so desperately to hold on to nearly crippled me. If it weren't for my daughter Daisy and my small but mighty support system, I wonder if I ever would have found the strength to pull myself out of that dark place. I'm unlocking! Damien's chipper voice registers from the front lobby, signaling to us that it's time to get to work. Sucking in a breath of motivation, I take a few more sips of coffee and tuck my blouse inside the hem of my skirt to hide the stain. Tamika nudges me with her elbow before sweeping past me. Another day, another dollar. That's right, I smile, turning to follow. The truth is, my job is predictable, maybe even a little boring, but that's exactly what I love about it. I crave the monotony and order. I punch in every morning knowing what I have to do, and knowing that I'll do it well. It's a sense of security amidst my unraveling life. Before I settle into my desk, I make a pit stop at the teller stations, noticing the lines in the lobby are already several people deep with customers waiting to make deposits or get something notarized. A typical Monday morning. Oh no, he did not. Tamika's voice is honey and vinegar in my ear as she moves behind me to her station on the counter. Hmm? I nod a smile to a customer, taking in the gangly construction worker who stops in every morning to flirt with Samantha, the Asian convenience store owner from down the block, and the elderly Mrs. Captain, come to do her weekly coin deposit. I never have figured out how the hell she comes up with so much change every week. They're in the line to the left of the large modern-style desk, and normally I'd give each of them a smile and a breezy good morning. It's part of what I love about my job as manager of this Seattle branch of Edgewater Bank, establishing an actual relationship with every client. Only, my smile wanes when my gaze cuts to the man barreling in through the glass doors. It's my ex, breezing devil-may-care into the bank with Daisy. Even from across the lobby, I see things. Jeremy's unshaven face and mismatched shoes, one navy, one black, his untucked shirt. Daisy's unkempt curls and the blob of jelly next to her mouth. Oh, yes, he did. You've got to be kidding me. My muttered response barely has time to cross my lips, prompting another snort from Tamika, when he's setting Daisy down before me and pushing her backpack across the teller desk.
Hey, he says, I have a meeting I can't be late for, so I figured I'd just bring Dee here. Right, Dee? Boop.
He leans down and boops Daisy's nose. She's only 4, but I swear she rolls her eyes, a unique shade of blue like mine. She despises being called Dee. Come here, baby girl. I bend and pick Daisy up, and she falls into a sort of boneless sprawl against my chest that she's almost too big for. I'll never reject it, though. It's the most precious weight I've ever borne. Jeremy turns to leave, but I stop him with a hiss.
You figured?
His hand reaches up to scratch his stubble, his eyes skating around the lobby as he looks for witnesses to our squabble.
Well, yeah. I mean, my work is just around the corner.
And you were late because you're obviously still drunk. So you figured, why not just drop her with the adult who's already on the clock, already working her job like a responsible...
Okay, now just hold on a second.
No, this has to stop, Jeremy.
I bite out, trying to rein in my outrage. I've always been the avoidant type, resistant to conflict and confrontation, and it's probably the reason I coasted along those choppy marital waters for far too many years. But Jeremy is the one person who can light my fuse like no one else, and I truly resent him for that.
I'm heading to work too, just like you, Indy.
My teeth clench in response.
You're nothing like me. I'm not an alcoholic.
Painful memories poke through my angry haze, tinging my cheeks red. Images of my ex-husband incapacitated from an alcohol binge on our wedding anniversary only heightens my resentment. I still recall with sickening clarity the moment Daisy skipped into the kitchen in her princess dress as Jeremy stumbled through the back door. He was supposed to be working, but he'd left early and had spent 3 hours at the local dive bar instead. He was utterly shit-faced that night, slurring, falling over, speaking gibberish. Jeremy tried pulling the casserole out of the oven with his bare hands, causing second-degree burns. His howl of pain had terrified our daughter as the ceramic dish crashed to the kitchen floor, breaking into tiny, fractured pieces. Just like our marriage. That had been the last straw for me. That was when I'd finally said, I'm done. It was a decision I hadn't taken lightly then, and I still don't to this day. The disintegration of my marriage is a stain I'll carry with me all my life. I don't like failure. I don't like calling it quits, because I'll always question if I could have done more. But as I gaze into the hollow eyes of the man I once loved, I know it was the right decision. Jeremy sniffs, looking everywhere but me.
Ah, now, when a man can't drink a beer in the solitude of his own apartment.
I try to ignore him, as his attempt to defend himself is absurd, but I can't help myself.
Let's just skip right to the part where you put my livelihood in jeopardy, because you're foolish and irresponsible. I'm tired of this, Jeremy. I divorced you to get away from it. It's exhausting, being the one to have to deal with the fallout every time you can't bring yourself to think of anyone but yourself. I'm just...
I have to stop to take a breath,
and I hate the hitch that it gives my breath when I continue. I can't do this.
You tell him, girl. Tamika murmurs behind me, segueing seamlessly into greeting her next customer.
And how are you doing today, sir?
I shake my head a little to discourage her, but inwardly I'm smiling. A single mother like me, only of a preteen boy, Tamika and I have been besties since I started working here. No one has my back like she does, because no one else has the same special brand of jackass X that we do. We share a knowing glance as she sifts through change. Realizing my voice rose progressively through my tirade, I glance around, hoping the customers aren't paying attention. For the most part, they're ignoring the domestic dispute playing out in front of them, occupied with their financial business. All except for one. A strikingly attractive man with tattooed arms and a piercing gaze, waiting patiently in Tamika's teller line. He's well-muscled and distinct, with dark waves of hair capped in gold. His eyes are on us, one eyebrow quirked. Shit, that's just what I need. A customer reporting my utter unprofessionalism to my boss. Tugging on the dregs of my control, I run a hand down Daisy's back and pull my mouth into the semblance of a smile before I turn back to Jeremy. I talk through my teeth. You need to take her to preschool. Now. Because it's after 9 and she was supposed to be there at 7:40. I can't leave, especially not now when the morning rush is beginning. I've only been working here for 10 months, the past 2 of which I've been proving my mettle as assistant manager. Jeremy has pulled the same stunt a grand total of 16 times. My math brain kicks into gear, and I calculate rapidly. That's once every 2.8 weeks, or in other words, enough times to be ridiculous. Jeremy shakes his head.
I can't, babe.
I am not your babe. An unladylike curse is on the tip of my tongue, but I hold it back, conscious of Daisy's curious ears. I would probably have an entire vacation's worth of quarters in a jar at home, reserved only for the secret obscenities I sling at Jeremy that I'll never say out loud.
It's an important meeting. I'll be fired, and you know what that means.
He clicks his tongue, his hands slipping into ratty denim pockets as he demonstrates his poor attempt at swagger.
No alimony, no child support.
Oh, please, as if you were that much of a provider anyway. Miss Chase, this gentleman needs to speak with you. Tamika cuts in, thankfully saving me before this argument escalates into something ugly. I cut my gaze over to see the tattooed stranger standing beside Tamika, his eyes patient. Now that he's closer, I can see that one eye is a soft, lambent brown, the other a greenish-blue. It ought to be weird, but it's not. It's hypnotic, pulling my attention from one to the other, then back again. The brown is pure comfort, the other electric blue sex.
Oh, okay. That thought process escalated.
I feel myself flush as I fidget with a button on my blouse. Stupid pale skin. Even with my blooming summer tan, I still blush far too obviously.
Yes, of course. I'll be right with you.
Jeremy huffs out of breath and shifts his weight, tugging my focus back to him.
Anyway, like I was saying, he continues, I've got a split. We can argue about it later, but right now, you'll have to figure out something with D.
He makes a show of looking at his watch, backing a few steps toward the glass doors as he does.
Because I'm officially off the clock for 2 weeks.
My skin prickles with indignation, my fingers balling into fists alongside my pencil skirt.
I spear my ex-husband with a sharp stare and gritted teeth, doing everything I can to hold back a rage-infused meltdown.
Tag, baby.
Jeremy grins, a cheeky thing I long to smack.
You're it.
Oh, for the love. This isn't a game, Jeremy. You... I break off, my attention snagged by the group of men who are entering the lobby behind Jeremy. He remains oblivious, continuing to back away toward them, his hands lifted in false contrition. They're dressed in dark coveralls, like painters wear, adorning inky black ski masks. Long-barreled guns are clutched in gloved hands, and these men are terrible, awful clichés. And yet, the possibility of something like this happening has been an apparition dogging every step since the day I started working here. I stumble back from the desk, catching the tattooed stranger shift in attention, the widening of his mismatched eyes when he sees what I see. The men in black, their masks, the guns. This isn't happening. My blood runs cold, my arms squeezing Daisy in a fearful grip. Daisy! Oh my God! My daughter is here! The frantic thought is barely given life in my brain when the man in front lifts his gun and, like a scene straight from Hollywood, points it at Marcus, our security guard standing a few feet away. He shoots without preamble. Marcus is still fumbling with a catch on his holster when he crumbles to the floor, shot in the arm, his mouth opening and closing in a caricature of surprise. The sound of the automatic weapon, loud and vulgar in the bank's hush, prompts several screams and instant chaos. Jeremy whirls and ducks, hands still raised.
"Now that I have your attention," the man says, his voice low and unrecognizable. "Let's get things started."
Chapter 2. Dax. "Dax, you devil! I had no idea you were in love with me." Blake scrolls through his phone as he tries to match my long strides through the busy Seattle streets of Belltown. It's Monday morning, the weekday rush, and our own hurried agenda a drive of motion pulsing along the byways of street and sidewalk. Blake's eyes narrow in on the latest gossip article while he sips bubble tea from a biodegradable straw. I can't help my amused snort as the absurdity of his claim registers. Surprise. "Don't tease me. My heart is fragile and easily manipulated." His elbow jabs me in the ribs as we move swiftly side by side. "Besides, if TMZ says it, then it must be true." I glance over Blake's shoulder, eyeing the ridiculous headline, as I rub away the sting of his rogue elbow. Retired hockey hunk Dax Reed gets cozy with longtime manager. Swiping the phone out of my friend's hand, a scowl unfurls between my eyes. "Let me see." "Hey!" he barks, attempting to grab it back. "You can take away my phone, but you can't take away my hopes and dreams." My gaze skims over the article, then settles on a corresponding photo of Blake and me, hugging at a recent promotional event. I can't hug my best friend without implication of us being lovers. Jesus. "Keep scrolling," Blake encourages, twirling his finger in a circular motion. "The look in your eyes in the second picture shows distinct desire. And the eyes don't lie, Dax. Just admit that you want me, and maybe, possibly, if you say please, I'll reciprocate your undying love." I toss the phone at him, and he catches it awkwardly, one-handed, almost dropping his bubble tea. "Rude," he snaps, "and don't act so surprised. Our sexual tension is staggering. Combine that with your enviable good looks and love for pairing snappy dress shirts with a streamlined profile, and shazam, it fits." A huff hits the humid air. "Your analysis of me is concerning," I deadpan. "And please don't say shazam." Blake slips his cell phone into his slacks with a casual shoulder shrug. "Well, then there was that tweet about the multi-poos. Everyone loves multi-poos. Denial doesn't suit you, Dex. Blake sing-songs as he smooths out his salmon polo and points toward the line of ruddy brick buildings. Ooh, we're almost there. A bubble tea slurp echoes over the bustling city noise, and I cross my arms over my snappy dress shirt as I glance up at the approaching bank, my mind wandering. Retired. The term boils my blood. More like I was checked into the boards so hard by that prick Allenson, I separated my shoulder and was forced out of the game. Removed from my career. Ousted from my passion. Maybe I was nearing retirement age anyway, at almost 32. But I wasn't fucking ready yet. I had a few good years left. Instead, I lost it all in one dirty play. I lost the thing that set my soul on fire. And I lost her. Refusing to succumb to the toxic black hole I had festered in for far too many months, I blow out a hard breath and focus on the weeks ahead. A fresh start. New possibilities. 20 days alone in a Hawaiian penthouse with coastal views, salty sea breezes, and the quieting lull of ocean waves to accompany my endless supply of Kona coffee. It's exactly what I need to dig deep and reevaluate my future.
Dex, Reed! Oh my god, I can't even! Can I get your autograph?
We're just shy of the cobblestone walkway that leads to the bank entrance when a young woman thrusts her cleavage and a pen in my face. Blake stands to the side, watching the crowd with deceptively relaxed posture. He's always on guard for the occasional crazy. I hardly blink, signing the swell of her breast on autopilot and flashing her my teeth. My smile fades as she skips out of sight, beaming, and my weary sigh travels over to Blake. There used to be a time when I liked signing breasts, when I enjoyed the spotlight, craved it even, the lights, the women, the blind adoration. It gave me her, it gave me Sabrina, then it ripped her away. Notoriety is a lot of things, but mostly, it's exceptionally lonely. Glancing at Blake, the words slip out with a solemn sort of yearning. Will it ever let up?
It's called Celebrity Status, Dex. It's this shocking new development.
Blake doesn't appear to detect the earnestness in my tone. He's glued to his phone again, as we make our way towards the glass double doors. I pause, offering, "Feel free to wait outside. I'm just going to make withdrawal. Then we can grab breakfast at Biscuit Bitch."
"I'm in this, big man. I've got your back."
He slaps me on the shoulder blade with a wink.
"Also, Damien works the lobby on Mondays. He's a snack."
A chuckle slips out as we make our way inside. "I've got your back." Blake may be half a foot shorter than me, about 170 pounds soaking wet, and has never and will never beat me at a game of arm wrestling. But despite his gangly stature and lack of muscle definition, his heart isn't lacking one bit when it comes to me. He is my most trusted friend, and there's no one else I'd want in my corner. I've done a lot of stupid shit over the years, but Blake Johnson has cleaned up my messes, no questions asked, no conditions. We've been friends since junior high, and the fact that he's my manager, well, former manager, is only an added perk. He's had my back for 2 decades, and I've had his. The sweet tang of lavender and lime permeates the air as we stroll through the crowded lobby and situate ourselves in one of the 3 teller lines. My fingers drag through my mop of dark hair, warmed at the tips from the summer sun, and in need of a cut. Scanning my fellow patrons, I notice a woman standing beside the teller stations, smiling at customers as they filter through the ever-growing lines. She stands out because she's beautiful, but also because she's trying in vain to hide a giant coffee stain on her blush blouse. And I find that all too relatable. Long, softly curled tresses, all butterscotch and honey, fall over 2 slender shoulders as she grins far too brightly for a Monday morning, and I find myself momentarily zoned out until Blake pokes me with his index finger.
"Ow! Where did you find this place, anyway?"
I plant my hands along my hips and spare a glance at the phone screen Blake is waving in my face. The penthouse condo I rented in Maui glows back at me.
"You found it.
You even texted me, "I found the best place ever for your soul-searching retreat," with 1,000 exclamation points.
Yeah, well, shame on me for not researching the amenities more efficiently. I don't see a bar.
Pretty sure I'll pull through. Blake continues to thumb through his apps, pausing on a photo of himself with another man, their arms draped around each other. He glares at the picture with disdain.
Really, Casey? You had to tag me in this photo?
I thought you guys had a thing. He balks at me.
It was a very brief tryst, Dax. It was not a thing.
Blake sighs, attempting to untag himself from the photo.
Casey is too butch. He looks like his mother.
My laughter is interrupted by an argument, and I clear my throat, peering over the golden-haired woman, who is no longer smiling. A scruffy-looking guy has joined her near her desk, while a young girl with pigtails lies draped across the woman's chest.
I can't do this!
There's a hitch in her voice, as turquoise eyes float around the lobby, inspecting the witnesses. When her gaze lands on me and my concerned stare, she wilts slightly, forcing a smile into place and reining in her anger. Her tone softens, making the rest of the conversation hard to hear, but my instincts still prickle with unease. The bearded man looks hungover, maybe drunk, and he's towering over her with insolence and venom. Not thinking it through, I wave over a dark-skinned woman with ruby lips and copper eyes. Hey, can you get her attention for me? My head nods in the direction of the ensuing scuffle. I have a question. She peers over her shoulder.
Miss Chase?
Yes, please. It's kind of urgent.
Certainly.
Miss Chase. Not married, then. Idly, I wonder who the dude is, how the kid figures in. I have no idea why, but something about the situation, about her, intrigues me. I watch with interest, my lips pursed, my arms folded, tuning out Blake's tirade about celebrity drama on Instagram. I'm transfixed, patiently waiting for those teal-tinged eyes to find me once again. Eyes that are the complete opposite of Sabrina's in every way. Sabrina had black eyes, onyx and coal. She had black hair, too. And a black heart. The woman finally faces me, her arms full, gaze curious. She's all brightness and daybreak, and I squint my eyes, almost as if they need to adjust to the light. Her irises flash with something heated, and she swallows, stuttering a reply in my direction.
Yes, of course, I'll be right with you.
She probably recognizes me. The woman severs the connection just as Blake steals my attention back. I glance at him, then do a double take, when I notice his familiar arched eyebrow. What?
She's pretty.
I scoff. You're pretty. Doesn't mean I'm interested.
TMZ would disagree with that.
A smile spreads. Then it disintegrates into dust before I can take my next breath. My focus shifts, firmly fixing to the bank's entrance, as four masked men plow through the glass door with murderous gait and weapons held high. Before I know it, before I can think, yell, reach for my phone, they blast a round of bullets into the ceiling, prompting the lobby patrons to break into an uproar of terrified cries. Holy shit. Holy fucking shit. Now that I have your attention, let's get things started. The booming voice of the ringleader, a beast of a man, echoes all around us, inciting my stomach to lurch with dread. Blake latches onto my upper arm, his fingers bruising my bicep.
Sweet baby Jesus in a motherfucking manger,
he whispers harshly.
Tell them you're famous, give them your savings account, and your firstborn.
Shh! Another round pops off like fireworks. Plaster and paint particles raining down on us. A sinister hailstorm. I move fast, pulling Blake with me.
Get down!
Tugging him by the arm, we lunge towards the nearest desk. It's where the blonde woman is now standing frozen, clutching the little girl to her chest, her panicked sobs piercing through the gunshots. Snatching her wrist, I drag us all underneath the desk for cover. The space is tight, my back plastered to Blake's chest, and the blonde clerk pulled into my lap on instinct.
Oh my god! Oh my god!
The woman is frantic, her fingernails digging into the child's scalp and back.
Is this real?
Shit, Indy, move over!
Indy, My brain registers her name despite the cloud of chaos.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?